Class, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. It's May 11th, 2011, and I'm sitting back having a lovely cup of organic jasmine green tea, and I'm going to enjoy this hour with you and our special guest today. We're going to be talking about, you know, my favorite subject, healthy, delicious, yummy, vegan, plant-based food. And we're going to be speaking with Christine Waltermeyer. She's the founder and director of the Natural Kitchen Cooking School. With over 15 years of experience in the field of natural cooking, Christine is a masterful chef and teacher specializing in macrobiotic, vegan, and raw food cuisines. Christine recently published her first cookbook, Natural Vegan Kitchen. She has appeared on Ebru TV's Daily Connection as a regularly featured chef. Her personal chef clients have included well-known celebrities, and Christine also teaches Food for Life cooking classes for the Cancer Project. She has co-taught with legendary natural foods leader Michio Kushi at the Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Lenox, Massachusetts. Christine has taught dynamic cooking classes at Integral Yoga Institute in New York City, Dean's Natural Food Market in Ocean City, New York, New Jersey, and Whole Foods Market in Princeton. Christine has been the subject of numerous newspaper and magazine articles, including Princeton's US1 magazine and the Asbury Park Press. Christine's written for Veg News magazine. She's the graduate of Millersville University, the Kushi Institute, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and is a member of the International Association of Culinary Professionals. She's a certified wellness coach for the Coach Training Alliance, and she specializes in gluten-free diets for children with special needs. It is Christine's passion to empower others with the skills and knowledge to create radiant health. Welcome, Christine.
Hello, Karen. Thank you for that great introduction.
Well, you did it. I just read it.
But you read it well.
Thank you. And welcome to the show. I have not met you in person, but it's great to read about you and great to read about why you do what you do, because I feel like we're kindred spirits in some way, and I always enjoy talking to people with a passion about food and who want to use food to improve people's lives, create health, and do it in a yummy, delicious way.
Yeah.
I think that's what life is all about.
Yes, I agree, and I think what you're doing is great as well.
So. Yeah, so hats off to both of us.
That's right.
If I'm pouring you a virtual cup of tea here.
Oh, that sounds great, that jasmine tea. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't like drinking alone. Mmm. Yeah, it's very good. I was really in the mood for it. Okay, so let's get started here. You have a new cookbook. How exciting.
Yeah, thanks.
And I don't know if people realize how much work goes into preparing a cookbook.
But yeah.
I know it takes a lot of work. And there's a lot of things, too. And one is, you know, just testing the recipes to make sure they're right so that when people reproduce them, they get what they're supposed to get.
Exactly.
I've been thinking a bit about the word natural lately for a number of reasons, and I just wanted to know, what does natural mean to you? Because you use it in the name of your cookbook, The Natural Vegan Kitchen. You use it in the Natural Kitchen Cooking School, and I'm just going to say a little bit more. We have natural food stores, and there's a lot of food products that use the word natural, and it's not a word that has been officially defined by our government for food products and regulation. What does it mean to you?
To me, I would say, you know, as close to Mother Nature as possible. So very whole and unprocessed or minimally processed, as if you had picked it right out of the garden.
I like that. That's what it should mean.
Yeah.
Amen. Huh. Okay. And you have quite a list of places that you've studied at in food preparation. How did you get started on this path?
You know, it started with my own health issues. Gosh, I was in my late teens, and I had had surgery twice for benign breast lumps.
Oh.
But I had about 20 removed, and probably that many grew right back, right under the scars. And
wow.
My surgeon at the time, when I was 22 or so, he said, you know, you can't keep coming out of surgery. You should really consider getting a double mastectomy.
Oh!
And I was like, I don't think so. So that set me on this quest of natural healing and discovering all I could about what I could do through food and diet to heal myself. And thankfully, I never had to have the surgery, and the rest is history.
Right. Well, I'm very happy to hear that. The interesting thing is that human beings, when we go outside of the healthful space that we're supposed to be in with a lifestyle that's filled with good nutrition and healthy food and healthy life practices, when we go outside of that, that's where our DNA kind of kicks in, and we all kind of fall apart differently. The poor nutrition, poor lifestyle will affect each of us rather individually, and I think that's what's challenging to the medical community and to society, because we see different things happening to different people, and we don't realize that most of them are just symptoms of the same problem.
Yes.
And so yours is rather unique, although there's certainly a lot of breast cancer and other issues. But I think the root of all of these symptoms is the same, where
yes.
We're not nourishing ourselves with natural healthy food.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so who were some of the inspirations for you when you did your research?
Oh, gosh, I have to really thank Michio Kushi. Neil Bernard has been fabulous. Recently, more the work of Joel Fuhrman. I really like his approach.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say those three really stand out. Of course, Christina Perrello is such a role model of a vivacious cooking teacher, and with her show. Rory Friedman, of course, is, you know, I can't even name all my heroes. Robin Robertson,
mm-hmm.
get me going.
So you seem to have been influenced a lot by the macrobiotic community.
Yes.
And is it just because you fell into that, or was there something that resounded with that sort of diet?
Right. You know, I have to admit, I started out as a junk food vegetarian. So
yep.
I was like, oh, Hydrox cookies, they're vegan, great. So when I had my first meal at the Kushi Institute of brown rice, steamed kale, and beans, it was like this life-changing experience. I was sitting there chewing and chewing, talking to cancer survivors who had healed themselves just by eating whole natural foods. And I
right.
thought, this is it. This is really it.
Well, the amazing thing is that from whatever angle you come from, a raw food diet or a macrobiotic diet, the bottom line is plant foods are the winner.
Yes.
And there are so many different cuisines now that this is happy eating, this is beautiful eating, this is satisfying eating, and there are so many different recipes and so many different vegan cookbooks coming out.
Yes.
Now, what sets yours apart from all the others that are out there?
You know, I would say the focus on, like you said, the word natural and whole and unprocessed, because I don't use white sugar, no white flour. I really like to have a high integrity with my ingredients. So
mm-hmm.
I would say that's something
yeah.
that I...
Well, what I like about it is these are, I think they're relatively simple recipes,
mm-hmm.
and all on the healthy slant, but creative enough, or the right blends of ingredients, so that these are really satisfying, tasty dishes.
Great. Thanks for saying that.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think so. And there's some really nice pictures. There's one recipe in here that's kind of decadent for me. But good to have from time to time, and that's the zucchini rice patties.
Mm.
And the ingredients are pretty simple and healthy, but it is they are fried. And I don't tend to use much oil, but I could use this recipe from time to time for like some sort of, I'm trying to think of what occasion would be best, but they sort of look like crab cakes.
Right.
And really, really fun.
Yeah, and, you know, alternatively, you can actually bake them. You could just maybe very lightly spray them with a mist of spray oil if you wanted to and just, you know, bake them instead.
Right. Well, that's the amazing thing. What I like about it is there's a season where zucchini is everywhere, and for those who get to garden and they're growing zucchini, there's this period where they're just overwhelmed. The zucchinis are becoming monsters, and you just don't know what to do with them.
Right.
And, you know, they make zucchini bread, and okay, enough already with the zucchini. But this is a great recipe that is a good use for zucchini that I haven't personally done myself. And I really like, in this recipe, you grate the zucchini. And I haven't seen zucchini. I've done it, and I like what happens to zucchini when it's grated, but I don't see that really ever in restaurants or anywhere.
Mm.
So here's two grated zucchini.
Yes, let's hear it.
What's your favorite in this book?
You know, it always changes. Gosh, if I had to pick a favorite, I mean, I definitely have a sweet tooth, so I love like the blueberry pear fluff. It's just a nice, light, satisfying dessert. It's really just using the natural sweetness of the fruit, and yet it gives you that little cozy satisfaction of having something, a treat at the end of the meal.
Right. Now, you have some classic ingredients from the macrobiotic kitchen, like the brown rice syrup and the kuzu starch.
Yeah.
And I know what kuzu starch is. I may have purchased it from time to time, but I'm not that familiar with it. Is it like other starches, like corn starch and potato starch?
Exactly, except it's a little more chunky. It almost looks like little broken up pieces of chalk, so you definitely have to dilute it in the cold water, just like other starches, and then add it to your warm, you know, whatever you're making it, gravy or sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So tell me, you started the kitchen school, the Natural Kitchen Cooking School.
There we go.
That was pretty ambitious.
A little bit of a tongue twister there.
And this is in New Jersey?
We have classes in New Jersey, two programs in New Jersey, and then one in Manhattan.
Hmm. Excellent. And what can people learn while they go through the school?
You know, it's an 8-month program. It meets one weekend a month for 8 months, and we have different themes each weekend. So we have a grain weekend, we have a bean weekend, vegetables, we teach some raw foods. Some of the macrobiotic theory, of course. We have great guest teachers like Alex Jameson, Fran Costigan, and they get goodie bags every weekend. So it's a really comprehensive program as far as plant-based cooking.
Mm. And 8 months, that's a good commitment.
Yeah.
So I imagine you get people that have a wide range of skills, from beginners to people that have a bit of knowledge about food preparation.
You're exactly right, yes.
Which can make it interesting when they're all mixed together in a classroom.
Right. It's a really nice sharing that you see going on. You know, we have one of our graduates is now teaching at the French Culinary Institute, and other folks are just happy to be cooking healthier meals for themselves or their family.
And is it all vegan?
It is all vegan, 100%.
Does anybody ever have any challenges with that when they come to the school? They know what they're getting into.
They know what they're getting into, and I'd say maybe probably, you know, not even half of our students are vegan, the other half, you know, but it's amazing over time. I think people sometimes come in, like we had someone once who was a bodybuilder, and she said, I eat meat, I just want to announce that. And then years later, she suddenly became vegan, and we don't push it. You know, we present the beauty of the food and the cooking and why we do it, the connection with the environment, and then if people want to make that jump, it's great.
What's interesting to me, I find some people are really naturals in the kitchen, and it doesn't matter what cuisine they're familiar with, but they just know what to do with food. And then other people are really out of place and are really lost. Do you see that in your school where, you know, there are some that really take to preparing and others don't have that, I don't know what to call it, imagination or... It's rough because when somebody gets the idea about transitioning to a healthier diet and including more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds in their diet. Some people just, they know what to do. Okay, they're used to having spaghetti and meatballs. They leave out the meatballs, and they might add some vegetables. But other people, it's just like a deer in headlights or something where, what do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How do I not eat meat? How do I not eat cheese? What is there to eat?
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing, the block.
Yeah.
Now, you also do some, do you do some coaching?
I do, yes. I do wellness coaching as well.
And is it related to food?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I basically call myself the food coach. So.
Okay. So I imagine you meet people like this where they just don't have an idea of where to begin?
Yes, and in the chef training program, we address that by introducing the five tastes, and we'll often taste test something and say, now, what does this need? You know, and then people will sort of jump in and say, oh, it needs more sour. Let's add a little brown rice vinegar, or it needs more sweet or salty. So we help to develop that intuition.
Hmm.
And with my coaching, I do that as well, making suggestions and drawing forth on their wisdom and making suggestions. So it's a process, but it really is magical how that can be developed.
Now, what would you like to see happen with this new cookbook that you just put out?
Well, I'm just so excited that it's been, you know, being reviewed on various blogs, and so far everyone's just given it really great reviews, and I guess I'd just like to see it affect more and more people in a positive way and help them to eat a healthy, balanced vegan diet.
That sounds pretty good to me. Okay, let's see. Any other things that you might want to discuss while we're here?
Oh, gosh, we covered a lot. This is just great. I'm enjoying my cup of tea.
Oh, you do. What do you have?
I'm just teasing. You offered me a virtual cup of tea earlier. So.
Right, okay. There's always time for tea.
That's right.
Let's see. Well, oh, you had an opportunity to do some work with the Cancer Project.
Yeah.
With the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Can you talk a little bit about that? I think that's such a great program.
It is. I really, I just love working with the Cancer Project and Neil Bernard and Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They have, if you go to cancerproject.org, they have an amazing selection of recipes on their website and great resources. And what they do is they have about 60 instructors all over the country, and I'm one of them, and we teach a, you know, 4 to 6 or 8 week program helping people who are either dealing with cancer or who want to prevent cancer to learn, you know, meals that can support their immune system, and they get to see a cookbook throughout the course. It's just a great program.
I really would like to see something like that just explode, either with PCRM or, and hospitals should provide something like that for every person that comes in with cancer.
Absolutely.
You know, I had my own experience with ovarian cancer. It was quite a scary time.
Ooh.
It didn't make sense that I got it, but I did.
Mm.
And I just decided to use everything I knew to get over to the other side and get well. And I realized, even though I thought I was a healthy vegan, I think that ultimately saved my life to begin with, and but I had to take my diet up a few notches, and I've just been cramming greens ever since.
Wow.
Green juice,
definitely.
And green foods, and
yes.
You know, some of us need to do a little more than others.
Yes, that's true. Yeah,
but
good for you.
The that information doesn't get out there enough, and you know, I see so many women in particular who are educated and you know, have the means, and they think they're doing things that are healthy. They're eating their yogurt every day,
yeah.
and they really don't realize what they really need to do, and then they get breast cancer or something else. And it's, well, I've heard so many numbers. You probably have heard some of them too. The conservative ones are that like 60% of all cancers could be prevented with diet.
Yes.
And it's probably more.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd think it would be front page news that we can, you know, take charge and do something about it. And I think it is getting out there gradually.
Now, I'm not familiar with Ebru's TV Daily Connection. Is that on television? Is that on the Internet?
Yeah, they're actually available on the Internet at this point. You know, that was something that I did a few years ago with Ebru TV, and yeah, that was a lot of fun. I loved working with them, and we did quite a few episodes. So,
is there any way that we can access that, or is that something from some time ago?
Yeah,
I always like to watch food shows on the Internet.
I know, me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have a link on our website, naturalkitchenschool.com. There's a section, I believe it's under Meet the Director and Watch Christine on TV, and then there's a link.
Okay, great. Well, definitely, I'm glad you mentioned that because I seem to have forgot to that your website is, again, what is it again?
Oh, sorry, naturalkitchenschool.com.
Naturalkitchenschool.com, great. And if you're interested in the cookbook, it's called The Natural Vegan Kitchen, Recipes from the Natural Kitchen's Cooking School. I think it's a great book for anyone who is transitioning to a healthier diet because there's a lot of very interesting but easy, well-balanced range of recipes in here from, like I like to say, soup to dessert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
And I wish you all the best, and I just hope you help many, many people that are open and receptive to learning about a healthy plant-based diet.
I hope so, too. That would make me so happy.
And it will make them happy. That's the point.
Yes.
Oh, well.
Win-win.
But they will only know when they try it.
Yes.
Okay, here's to delicious food. Thank you, Christine Waltemeyer, for joining us today on It's All About Food.
Thank you.
Have a great day. All right, I think we'll take a quick little break, and I'll be right back. And you're listening to It's All About Food. And you can make comments or send me questions by email at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. Or if you like, and you're listening to this show live, you can call in at 1-888-874-4888. 1-888-874-1. Oops, I blew it. There's too many eights, and I just get all confused. 1-888-874-4888. There we go. So let's start in the conversation and talk about my favorite food. No, my favorite, which is food. I love food, as long as it's natural, like we were just talking about with my guest, Christine Waltemeyer, and from plants, healthy plant foods. I occasionally turn on the television. It's not very often. And I catch the 11 o'clock news. And a couple of nights ago, you notice many of the news stations do this now. It's all entertainment. It's not really bulk of news, but they have these little trailers to keep you going through the program. Wait till you hear about this and what about this new secret that and some great food that's going to do this for you. And they go, stay tuned. And then you finally watch it. And it's basically the trailer that they've been showing you the whole time, plus maybe 30 seconds more of information. And it's usually pretty disappointing. A couple of nights ago, there was a program on black foods. Did anyone catch it? It was crazy. So I give the network credit. I think it was CBS. gosh, I don't even remember, but I give them credit for talking about healthy foods because ultimately they were promoting the black foods like blackberries and black beans. And they showed some pictures of eggplant, which in my book are kind of purple and brown, not really black. And they're certainly not black on the inside. But I just thought it was something kind of weird, but I guess they run out of topics to be creative about, so they wanted to talk about black food, kind of implying that people don't naturally like to eat foods that are black. And I don't know. I don't know anyone that's ever told me, ew, I don't want to eat it because it's black. I can think of numerous candies, for example, that are black, like licorice. And licorice, some of the plain licorices are actually more sensible as a candy because they're not too sweet and are made from natural ingredients. But there are plenty of black foods, and I've never heard anyone say when they're served a blackberry, ooh, I don't want to eat it, it's black. So I thought it was a really bizarre take, but I want to give them credit for promoting beans, like black beans, because beans, no matter what color they are a superfood in my book. But let's not discriminate. There are white beans and pink beans and red beans, sometimes called kidney beans, and the white beans are actually sometimes called navy beans. Certainly there are black beans, and there are different kinds of black beans. There are black soybeans, there are white soybeans, there are little black turtle beans. There are a whole host of lentils. Lentils can be brown, they can be green, they can be pink, yellow, orange. Let's go on and on. There are split peas that are green and yellow. And the wonderful thing about beans, it's not only all the colors, but they're really, really inexpensive. And they are easy to prepare and super, super nutritious. I've heard some discussions from time to time about food combining and how we have to, I talked about this on my Ask a Vegan show recently, about not eating protein with starch, like meat with potato. And I certainly agree that not eating meat with a potato is a good thing, because meat is not really a good thing. But in a bean, or in a lot of plant foods, you've got the macronutrients, protein, carbohydrate, and fat all together. So I'm kind of confused when people say you really shouldn't be combining these foods. Does that mean you're not supposed to eat plant foods? Because all plant foods have protein, carbohydrate, and fat in them. And guess what? The body knows how to digest them. Magic. And of course, if there are foods that you don't feel well eating, then don't eat them. But I'm not someone that really follows the concept of food combining. I like to eat what I want to eat when I want to eat it. And I usually feel pretty good about it because they're all whole plant foods. So let's get back to beans. There are so many things that we can do with beans. And the easiest thing is to buy them in the can, have them available, they're ready anytime, and you can make so many things with all the different kinds of beans. Now, something that's certainly been getting a lot of play is hummus, which is made from garbanzo beans. You can make it yourself by just blending up garbanzo beans in a blender, adding lemon juice, a little sesame tahini, and then you could add olive oil, you don't have to. You could add salt, you don't have to. The great thing about it is I always try and stay away from oil and salt, so I can make my own, and I don't have to put the salt or the oil in it. It's much better that way. I find hummus, for example, that you get in the store, most of them have preservatives in them, like a sodium benzoate, for example. And I don't need that in my food. Do you? Sure, it's convenient. But do we need those things in our food? If it's not in there, and there are some brands that don't contain sodium benzoate or other preservatives, there are a handful of them. What happens? Well, they don't stay in your refrigerator for very long. They go bad. So what do you need to do? You need to eat the food that you buy when you buy it. This idea of having food last for a week or 2 weeks or a year or whatever, there's a price. So I encourage avoiding preservatives in food and certainly avoiding salt. And the best way to do that, unfortunately, is to make things yourself. And I prefer, actually, to go one step further and buy my beans in bulk. They're a lot less expensive that way. They stay forever. You can store them in pretty little jars. If you don't have room in the cupboards, you can have them out on a shelf or in the counter, and they're just there waiting for any time. And those are the kinds of foods that will last forever until you're ready to prepare them. And it just requires a little planning, not a lot of time, just planning. So you plan the night before or the morning before. You can soak them for about 8 hours in a pot covered with water. You don't have to do anything. Just let it sit there. And then when you're ready, you pour off the water, you rinse them, add new water, and cook them. And again, you're not doing anything. It's just sitting in a pot. When they're all done, that's when you can get creative. You can just eat them simple, plain, sprinkle them on salad. You can mash them and add some seasonings and make a pate or a spread for sandwiches. There are so many different things. And then when you start making iterations by the different kinds of beans that you can use, because I mentioned you can make a hummus with garbanzo beans and sesame tahini and a little lemon juice. Well, you can do the same thing with another bean. And then you've got a theme and variation here. You can do it with a white bean. And let's say you don't have tahini. Well, you can use almond butter. You can use peanut butter. You can use any nut butter. Gives it a little extra flavor with the fat that's in the nut butter. And then instead of lemon juice, well, why not lime juice? Everything makes it just a little bit more interesting. You can certainly make these similar kinds of pâtés with pink beans or red beans. They all work. And they're all good. There are lots of recipes for them. And you can find them in books. You can find them on the Internet. You can email me at info@realmeals.org. I'll get you going. There are just so many wonderful, wonderful things you can do with beans. And I'm always pushing salads. Green, 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 green. A lot of people say that they're not satisfied with salad, and I have two responses to that. One is, if it's not satisfying, eat more. The great thing about a salad that's just mostly leafy green vegetables is there are hardly any calories, and it's packed with immune-boosting nutrients. Eat more. But if the leaves, green leaves, aren't going to do it for you, that's where the beans come in. You can sprinkle a third of a cup, a half a cup of any kind of bean, or make it a mix. And that makes the salad more substantial. It makes it more satisfying. The beans give you that feeling, that satiated feeling. They're really super. And lately, I go back and forth in terms of what I feel like eating when I'm having breakfast. Sometimes I get up and I don't want to eat anything. And you know what? If you're not hungry, don't eat. But if you're going off to work and you know you're going to have hunger when you're at around 10 o'clock or something and you don't have access to food, well, then you have to plan and have something nutritious for when you know you're going to get hungry. But sometimes I go for the traditional cereal-type food, like an oatmeal with fresh fruit. But a lot of times I want something savory. I get away from the need for sweet foods. And so if I've made a big pot of soup that's loaded with lots of different beans and vegetables, well, sometimes I'll have soup for breakfast. Why not? it's really, really satisfying. Can't say enough about beans. And, you know, so what can you make? You can make bean soup with lots of different vegetables. You can make bean burgers. Yes, you can. And all it takes is a bean, like a black bean. Could be a red bean, could be a pink bean. And it's up to you to add the vegetables, the spices. You might need a little flour or a little grain in there to help hold it together. But there's a whole variety of different patties and burgers you can make. And it all depends on the herbs and spices that you use. There's a world of variety out there. It's not boring. Of course, I talked about the pâtés. And then you can even use beans for some desserts. Have you been to some of those Asian bakeries where they have these, what are they called, bean, they're like a pastry with a sweet bean filling. So beans are the all-purpose, beautiful food, inexpensive, easy, and no matter where you go in the world, you're always going to find beans. And I've been discovering beans I've never known or seen before. When you go into different ethnic stores, there are different varieties that don't seem to make it into the mainstream supermarkets. It depends on the culture, and that can make it all that more interesting. Okay, I got a question here about good recipes for rice, and the listener wants to make a healthy Spanish yellow rice. That sounds pretty good. There are, again, the whole grains, just like the beans, there are so many of them. The variety is tremendous. And so starting with rice, we go with all those colors again. There is white rice, there's brown rice, there's short grain brown rice, there's medium grain brown rice, there's long grain brown rice, there's basmati rice and jasmine rice, there's black rice, there's red rice. Do you get my drift? There are so many different kinds. And then that's just rice. Let's go talk about barley or rye or millet or quinoa, and there's black quinoa and red quinoa and white quinoa. There's certainly a different grain for every day of the week, and you probably don't have to repeat for a very long time. But then let's say you want to jazz it up. Traditionally, when people made rice in America, the United States, I guess in the 50s and 60s, a lot of times a chicken broth bouillon, this kind of powdery chicken bouillon, was used in the water to flavor the rice. And it was usually loaded with a lot of salt, probably some artificial flavorings and preservatives, and it gave the rice a nice yellow flavor, a nice yellow complexion, and certainly had a lot of salt in it. I don't recommend that. But it could be nice to flavor the water that you're cooking your grain in, and you can do that in many, many ways. You can certainly use a vegetable bouillon, and I prefer the kind that are salt-free or have minimal salt, because if you haven't gotten my message yet, I am anti-salt. There's plenty of sodium in our plant foods that we eat. We don't need to add it in a shaker. So the grain, in the water that you're cooking the grain in, you can season it with a bouillon, or you could add some fresh garlic. You can add onion to the water. Celery is great. If a stalk of celery or cut up. I like to put in celery in my potatoes too, because celery has a lot of minerals in it, and it has a salty, naturally salty flavor, and that can help bring out the flavor of the rice or the other grain. It's these aromatic kind of vegetables, onion, carrot, celery, that are great to add to cooking water when you're preparing something like a soup or a grain. Then there's my favorite herb, spice. It's not an herb. It's a spice, turmeric. And is there a correct way to pronounce it? I call it turmeric. Some people say turmeric. It's a root. I've seen it grow in Costa Rica. It's really ugly and gnarly. But when you go to a market, they've ground it up, and it's a beautiful orange powder. And it has so many great properties. It's really a healthy spice. It's used a lot externally on the skin for a variety of remedies, and it's also very healthy to ingest. It has great immune system properties and anti-cancer fighting properties. But the great thing about it is the color. And you can certainly add a teaspoon or more of the turmeric to the cooking water, and that will make your rice a nice yellow, and it gives a nice flavor. I also like to use turmeric when I'm making a tofu dish, like a scrambled tofu, and I want it to look like eggs. Mashing up the tofu while it's in the frying pan and being sautéed with other vegetables, I'll sprinkle in the turmeric, and it turns everything a nice yellow. But the advantage is you get a great color, but this spice is really, really good for you. So it's good to add on everything, but you have to be careful because it can get bitter. So you don't want to add too much. You want to add a little at a time. Test the color, test the flavor, and see how it feels to you, because it can get, like I said, a little bitter. And then once the rice is prepared, and I don't know, some people are challenged with rice, and I'm not sure why. It's very simple. I take a cup of grain, rice or other grain. I put it in a saucepan. I add 2 cups of cold water, mix it up, cover it, turn the heat on to medium. I wait for it to boil. When I see that it's boiling, I turn the heat down low, let it simmer, make sure it's covered, and I don't look at it for a while. I might check on it occasionally, but I don't touch it. And then the rice will absorb all the water, and it's done. No big deal. It's really, really easy. And it works with all grains, although the ratio might be a little bit more water or less water to the grain, depending on the grain. But it's pretty much like that. Then when it's done, you can have your vegetables sautéed. Onions are great, finely chopped onions sautéed. I always use water. You might want to use a little oil, but again, I like to stay away from the oil. Or you could dry sauté too. Once the vegetable heats up, it will let go of some of its moisture so that there's something for it to cook in the pan. And then when the rice is cooked, you can simply toss it with the other vegetables. There are lots of different recipes for a Spanish rice, and it depends on what exactly you're interested in. You can make it spicy if you like. Add a can of chopped tomatoes or fresh tomatoes can go in it, and then some hot chili if you like that. There's just so many varieties, so many ways to do it. Use your imagination. I love food, and it's always a pleasure every day to open the cabinet, and it's almost like the cutting board is a blank canvas, and every day I get to create some new artwork. Back to things I hear in the news. So last night on the news, there was a special little program about binging. And people, apparently a lot of people, have a problem with binging where they may eat healthy for a few days and then somehow they can't seem to resist eating an entire bag of potato chips or consuming an entire gallon or whatever it is of ice cream. And this can have all kinds of problematic effects, certainly on your weight and on your health. And I'm always trying to help people move to the bright side of the happy world of plant-based foods. It does take time. It takes a bit of training. But once you've educated yourself and made a decision about the foods you are going to eat and the foods you aren't going to eat, all of a sudden, those foods that aren't really healthy for you, they don't exist anymore. It does take a certain amount of discipline. It takes a certain amount of focus. For me, clearly, I didn't want to eat a lot of different foods because they were animal-based. And once I made the connection between the exploitation of animals in food, I didn't want to support that, and I didn't want to eat them, plain and simple. And so when there were foods, animal foods, either meat-based foods or dairy-based foods, cheese foods, that had always been appealing to me at one point in my life, and I didn't want to eat them anymore, I needed to make that conversion in the connecting I had with that food. And so where at one point it was a comfort food, it was a food that was connected to happy times and family and holidays and traditions and just good flavors, I had to convert those thoughts to, no, that food is related to pain, that food is related to suffering, that food is related to exploitation, that food is related to poor health, that food is related to cancer and disease, that food is related to harming the environment. And it can happen very quickly. It could take a focused amount of effort, but it does work to the point where those things that you don't want to eat are no longer appealing. You don't want to eat them. And I haven't been doing it so long that there are actually the smells of some of these foods that become very offensive. I was at an event recently and was sitting next to someone who had eggs and bacon, and I find the smell of any kind of pork really, really terrible. Whereas when I was very young, I used to eat that food, and I thought it was good. But now I associate it with pain and suffering. Pain and suffering doesn't smell good to me. And so any change that we want to make in our lives becomes work, some sort of work. But no pain, no gain. I think there's a lot of benefit to doing things that you believe in, doing things that are going to promote your own health and wellness. Another thing in the news that I wanted to talk about, and I think this is going to get lots of press, there's going to be a lot more discussion about this over time, and that's urban gardens. So, you know, we talk about the possibility of some traumatic event. It could be a terrorist attack, it could be a horrific weather event like an earthquake or a tornado or a hurricane or a flood or a drought. It could be some sort of political event, it could be an economic crash. And then here we are, all of us in the city, and we can't get food. And people are starting to think about it, but I don't like to think about it just because of some big event or something negative that's going to happen. The reality is we all need to get back to producing food and not depend on at least some of it from these big businesses, these giant agribusinesses that are making poor and poor quality foods, destroying our croplands, using a lot of toxic petrochemicals, fertilizers, pesticides, and we need to get back to growing some of our foods. And I love what's going on in some of the urban environments where people are finding little nooks and crannies, parks, old lots, And so there was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle talking about urban farming going on in Oakland. Oakland's a pretty interesting place. There's a wide range of populations there. There are some poor communities, some entrepreneurial stuff going on there. But there are more people that are doing urban farming, and now the government has to get involved because they have to figure out how to regulate this, because the rules generally say that you can grow your own food for your own purpose, but if you want to sell it to others or make other products from the food you're growing, well, that needs some regulation. But it's going to be curious to see what comes out of it, because the need is going to make itself very apparent where, number one, we should be growing a lot of our food, but number two, especially in this economy where people are finding themselves out of work or looking for work, growing their own food could be, certainly could reduce their costs, their basic need costs for providing their families with food, but also could be a way for them to bring in a little income. So the laws are going to have to change, and it's going to really be interesting. So if you have access to a garden or a small plot, I really would like to see the movement where we gather together as communities and grow food together in a neighborhood, even in an urban environment where we all tend to kind of ignore each other. This could be a great opportunity. Get to know your neighbor, get to know your community, and literally break bread together where we share in the growing of food and in the harvest. So I think that's something to look forward to. I'm looking forward to it. Meanwhile, I'm just growing my own sprouts here at home and growing whatever herbs I can on my terrace. And there you have it. You've been listening to It's All About Food, and I'm Karen Hartglass. Please join me next week. I will be speaking at length with Ronnie Cummins from the Organic Consumer Association, and we will be talking about lots of food-related topics, especially with organic food. Thanks for listening.